I was originally going to give a shiur on a few of the parshios in the not so far distant history, but I decided that it would be more relevant to give a shiur about as a preface and a introduction to the book of Shmos, which we're starting this week. And a very interesting idea that also has to do with last week's Sedra, coming week's Sedra, and the book of Shmos in general. Okay, all of the books of the Torah have two names. The name that is derived from the first few words of the book, Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim. And then there's the thematic name that the rabbis gave each of these books, which is less well known. The truth is, it's very well known, but you don't know that that's what you know. The thematic names of the books are Sefer HaYetzira, the book of creation, that's Bereishis; Sefer HaGeula, the book of redemption, that's Shmos; Toras Kohanim, the laws of the Kohanim, which is Vayikra; Chumash HaPikudim, the Chumash of the census, which is Bamidbar; and Mishneh Torah, the repetition of the Torah, which is Devarim. Now, you all know those names, but you know them in Greek. Because when the Greeks translated the Torah into Greek, they took the names for the books from what the rabbis called these books as their thematic name. Genesis is the book of creation. Exodus, the book of redemption. Leviticus is the laws of the Levi, of the Kohanim, which is Torah's Kohanim. Numbers, if you ever wondered what in the world is Bamidbar in the desert, have to do with numbers. That's Chumash HaPikudim. All of they went into the desert and they were counted, and they came out of the desert, they were counted. So the numbers, the Chumash of counting, of numbers, is numbers. And Deuteronomy, Deuter means double, and Anami is law. So it's the review of the law is Deuteronomy, which is Mishneh Torah. So the names that the rabbis gave the Chumashim are the names that the Greeks took for these Chumashim, and that's the thematic name. Now, if you think about it, the name that's derived from the first few words and the thematic name fit each other like a glove in four instances, but in one it seems very difficult to see a connection. Bereishis, in the beginning, book of creation, goes together very nicely. Vayikra, God called to Moshe from the Mishkan to tell him the laws that have to do with the Mishkan and the Kohanim. So the book of the laws of the Kohanim and God called to Moshe go together. Bamidbar refers to everything that happened in the desert between the two senses. So Chumash HaPikudim and Bamidbar go together. Eila HaDvarim, these are the words that Moshe spoke. What words did he speak? The review of the Torah. They also go together. The only one that doesn't seem to have any connection between these two names is Shmos. Shmos means names, and the book is called the Book of Redemption. Now, what in the world does names have to do with redemption? That is the question. Why is the Book of Redemption called the Book of Names? In order to understand this, to understand really what the significance of names is, let me give you one more question about these names and something that is relevant to the season or the season I will be going to tonight in Chutz Laretz, and I hope to hear the same announcement again this year as I've heard in two other past times over the years. It says the Elish Shmos B'nai Yisrael, these are the names of B'nai Yisrael, to tell us how precious the Jewish people are to God. Because before they died, God counted each tribe and called them by name in Parshas Vayigash. And now after they died, again, he counts them one by one and calls them by name like the stars. Just like the stars. Mona nispar lakochavim, God counts every star. L'kulam b'shemos yikra, he calls everyone by name. So just like the stars are counted one by one and everyone has a name, so too the Jewish people are counted one by one and everyone has a name. Now what is the big deal? That shows how precious we are. What is so precious about being called by name and counted one by one? Right? God calls every star by a name. That shows that they're precious. Just to give you an idea of how insignificant that may be, about 8 years ago, 10 years ago, I was in the States around this time of year, and I heard on the radio the following. In case you have someone who has everything, which in America is, I guess, possible, and you're having a problem what to give them as a gift during this season, so we have a suggestion. If you'll send $25 to a certain address, we will name a star for the person that you want to give the gift. We will send him a certificate certifying that star such and such with such and such coordinates is named on his name, and we will register it in the star registry. About 4 years ago, I was back there also this time of year, and I heard that it was up to $50 now from $25, and I'm sure now it's up to $75. So it must be a lucrative business. this is a total sham, because there is no such book called the Star Registry that has any official capacity. Right? I can write a book and call it the Star Registry. It also has no more standing than their Star Registry. And I can sell you any star you want, register it in my Star Registry, send you a certificate that this star is called by your name, and that's it. In fact, you could go outside, not tonight, right? Pick any star you want. In fact, pick them all. Name them all for yourself. Register them in your own little star registry, and that's about as official as it is. Right? According to your star registry, that's the names of the stars. So in any case, that's what it means. God calls every star by a name. What's the big deal? What does this show the preciousness of the stars and the Jewish people? In order to understand this, I want to go back to something from last week, Sedra. And once we understand that, we'll understand better what's going on in this week's Sedra. Yaakov Avinu calls his children together, and he tells them that he wants to reveal to them what will happen in the end of days. And the rabbis say he wanted to tell them when Mashiach was coming, when the deadline, when the kates, legalos lahemes hakates, to tell them when the deadline for Mashiach was. And for some reason, which right now will remain obscure, he forgot. It was hidden from him. Nistam minenu. It's hidden from him, seemingly, taken away from him. And he couldn't tell him when Mashiach was coming. Well, it seems that he knew. And hischil lomar dvarim acher. And therefore, he started to tell them other things. Basically, he gave them blessings. Okay. So, a few questions here. First of all, if Yaakov Avinu had planned to tell his children when Mashiach was coming, that's why he called them together. He osvu v'agido lachem, eis asher yikra etchem ba'achris hayomim. Gather together and I will tell you what will happen to you in the end of days. And all of a sudden his mind went blank. Then it's not normal that he would now just all of a sudden start telling him something else. He would have to say, listen, come back some other time, I have to prepare, I forgot what I wanted to tell you. Right? You don't just extemporaneously, spontaneously start saying something else. What's the connection between the fact that he gave him blessings now and he forgot when Mashiach was coming? That they're seemingly unrelated things. So why all of a sudden did he start doing that? He didn't intend to give them blessings, it seems, at this point when he called them in. He intended to tell them when Mashiach was coming. In addition, Torah says pretty clearly that he gave them blessings. And this is what the father spoke to them. And he blessed them. Each one according to his blessing, each one got a blessing. Now that's not what it seems from the Torah. Because let's see a sampling of the first three sons out of 12, which is 25%. Reuven, what was his blessing? Reuven, pachas kamayim al tosar. Right? Reuven, you are the Bechor. You could have been the Kohen. You could have been the Melech. Tough luck, you lost them all. You were impetuous. You're not any of those. For a bracha like that, I'd stay home. Right? That doesn't sound like a great bracha. Shimon and Levi, what bracha they get? Or apam tios. Cursed is their anger because it's too strong. Doesn't sound like a blessing. Yeah. Okay, we'll get to that. But it's not a bracha, right? Doesn't seem to be a bracha. And Shimon and Levi don't seem to get a bracha. So out of 12 sons, three of them, right off the bat, don't get any brachas. So why does the Torah say they all got brachas? Beyond that, some of the other ones don't seem to get blessings. They were just, this one's compared to a snake, this one's compared to a donkey, this one's compared to a deer. It's very nice for the zoo. What does that have to do with blessings? So, where's the blessings here? In fact, the Ibn Ezra, because of this question, says that what the Torah records is not the blessings. We don't know what the blessings were. That's an addition. This is what the Father spoke to them. And he also blessed them. We don't know the blessings. That's in the Torah, not the blessings. That every commentary argues on the Ibn Ezra, every Medrash argues on, the blessings are what's in the Torah. If that's the case, the first three didn't get blessings. Let me tell you a few Medrashim, and then we'll start to get to some answers. The Medrash says that when Yaakov, what happened? Why did he forget, or why didn't he tell them when Mashiach is coming? So one Medrash says like this. Yaakov called his children in, and he looked at their names. And he saw that in the names of his children, two letters never appear. Ches and Tes. No tribe has the letter Ches in it. No tribe has the letter Tes. What do those two letters spell? Ches and Tes? Chet. Sin. There is no sin in the names of my children. So he said, wow, there's no sin in the names of my children. I'm going to tell them when Mashiach is coming. Then he looked again, and he found there's two other letters that don't appear in the names of his children. Kuf and Tzadik, Chetz, the end, the deadline. It's not there. So he said, well, there's no Chet, there's no sin, but there's also no Chetz. I can't tell them when Mashiach is coming. It's not in the names. So what does that mean? I understand that no sin is hinted to in the names of the Shvatim. They're perfect. But no Kates? Mashiach's not going to come. Mashiach is not hinted to in the names of the Shvatim. Why not? Another Medrash. Medrash says, what can Yaakov be compared to? Why did he not tell them when Mashiach's coming? Because he can be compared to the following instance, following allegory. There was a confidant of a king who was dying. King's friend. And he calls his children to his deathbed, and he wants to reveal to them the mysteries that the king confided in. So he's just ready to tell his children these mysteries, and he sees the king is standing there by his bed. So seemingly he's embarrassed. He's not going to reveal the mysteries of the king in front of the king. So instead of revealing the mysteries, he tells his children, be very careful of the honor of the king. So too, Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell the mysteries of the king. He wanted to reveal when Mashiach was coming. But he sees that God's presence is right there by the bed. So out of embarrassment, he's not going to reveal the mysteries in front of God. So he does something else. He blesses them. Right? Yeah, I'm saying, but you don't always feel his presence. Here, his presence was felt. So the question is, the marshal... Right, doesn't fit the Nimshal. The rabbis could have made the marshal any way they wanted to fit what they were trying to compare it to. What should have been the marshal? The confidant of the king wants to tell his kids the mysteries the king confided. He's embarrassed because the king is there, so instead he blesses them. That's what it should have been. Same thing with Yaakov. He wants to tell the mysteries when Mashiach is going to come. He gets embarrassed, so he blesses them instead. Why did they introduce a factor that has nothing to do with what happened? That he told his children, be careful of the honor of the king. That's not what Yaakov said. That's not part of the story. Why is the allegory different than what they're trying to make it similar to? Where does that factor come in? And also, it's difficult to learn what we just said, because it would come out that the confidant of the king wants to do something behind the king's back that he's embarrassed to do in front of the king. So what kind of friend is he? That's a great friend of the king, right? Who wants to do things that the king would be insulted or upset about if he knew about it? So what kind of confidant is that? So there must be another explanation of this medrash, which we'll get to. One more medrash, and then we'll start with some answers, or at least get on the path of getting some answers. The other medrash says, "V'schus ve'ela shmos b'nei Yisrael," in the merit of the names of the Jewish people, Miskaimim ve'ele toldo shamayim ve'oritz, exist the heavens and the earth. The world exists for the names of the Jewish people. Now, what does that mean? Exists for the names of the Jewish people? The answer is the following. Let's go to another thing, and this is going to start opening up some answers. But it's one more question. We're going to answer this question, though, on the spot. Later on in Parshas Kisisa, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Bnei Yisrael the following: Re'ei Karasi B'Shem B'Tzalel Ben Uri Ben Hur. See that I call the name of B'Tzalel, the architect and the builder of the Mishkan. See, Re'ei, that I call the name of B'Tzalel. The Sfarno says whenever the word Re'ei is used in the Torah, and it doesn't mean to physically see something, we're not talking about something tangible, it means to think, contemplate, ponder. Think about this for a while. Think about the fact that I called the name of B'Tzalel. Now, how long in the world can you think deeply about that? About a second? God called the name of B'Tzalel. What's there to think about deeply? The answer is that a name represents the qualities, the abilities, capabilities, and talents of anything that name refers to, especially in Hebrew. It says that Adam HaRishon called names to all of the things in creation, including himself and including God. And the names are descriptive names. They describe the attributes, the essence, the qualities of the thing that's being named in Hebrew. For instance, a kelev. Why is it called a kelev? That's arbitrary. Could have been called a chatul, but they already got cats with chatul, so they gave the kelev. No. Kelev is kelev. A kelev is a very, like a heart, one heart. A dog is a very loyal pet. It has one heart to its owner, very devoted to its owner. So a kelev is a symbol of devotion on one level. The numerical value of kelev has something to tell me about the dog. Right, the letters look has something to tell me. I don't know where they are, but each thing reveals another aspect about the thing that it names. Therefore, the name represents the qualities, attributes, abilities, capabilities, and talents. In fact, it says that every person has four names: the name God gives you, the name your parents give you, the name your friends give you, and the name you make for yourself. In my estimation, what it means is the following. Everyone has various talents, abilities, and capabilities, and qualities that are part of their makeup. Some of those are directly given to you by God. When your soul was created, every soul was created to serve a little bit different purpose in this world, and was equipped to serve that purpose. So one name, meaning, qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents that you have is directly from God. That's the name God gave you. Then there are certain qualities that you get from heredity. That's the name your parents give you. Then there are certain qualities you get from the environment, from learning from other people. That's the name that your friends give you. All of those are potential. What actually is your essence? Whatever you realize from that potential. That's the name you give yourself. That's the main name. So the name of a person represents his abilities, capabilities, talents, his qualities, his essence. Therefore, what God is saying is the following. Re'ei, think deeply into this. Karasi b'shem, I called B'Tzalel's name, meaning I gave him tremendous talent. B'Tzalel was a very talented young man. He was an architect, a builder, a jeweler, a metal worker, a very big Talmud Chacham, a Kabbalist, the Gemara says. He, you name it, a woodworker, carpenter, he was it. Both physically, artistically, spiritually. Right? God gave him. Betzel Kael, right. He was in the shadow of God. Where did he get those talents? He went to trade school, went to college. Right? He was a slave his entire life in Egypt. It's obvious that God blessed him. They were inborn, right? Essential talents that were God-given gifts. Obvious. That's the first thing to realize. B'Tzalel was not the exception to the rule. Just like B'Tzalel, every human being is given talents, abilities, and capabilities that are God-given gifts. And they have that potential. Each one something different. Not necessarily as vast and as varied as B'Tzalel, but everybody has something that they do well. something that's special to them, or a combination of things. First thing to think about. Second thing to think about. Why do you think God gave Bezalel these qualities? Why do you think God gave Bezalel these qualities? So he could build shopping centers, townhouses, maybe. But it's obvious that somebody had to build the Mishkan. So somebody had to be talented to do it. So God endowed Bezalel with these talents so he could build the Mishkan. That's the second lesson. Every person has talents, abilities, capabilities. And they were given to him in primarily to use them somehow in service of God. You could use them for other things too. You could use them to make a living. But your primary purpose was to use them somehow in your service of God, for the sake of the Jewish people, for the sake of the Torah, for the sake of promoting your own spiritual life, whatever it may be, that was the primary reason, just like the Tzal. So that is the lesson we learn from the Tzal. Re'eh, think deeply. Karasi b'shem Tzal. I called the name of the Tzal, and I gave him all these talents. And it's obvious I gave it to him so he could use it to build the Mishkan. And learn from him that everybody else is similar. And in some way, everybody is given talents, abilities, and capabilities. That we can understand also when it says that the world exists for the names of the Jewish people. What does that mean? Why was the world created? Bishvil Yisrael shenikraim reishis, bereishis. Bishvil Yisrael shenikraim reishis, or bishvil haTorah shenikra reishis. For the sake of the Jewish people and the sake of the Torah. That was why the world was created. Meaning, God created a world, and he put a Jewish people in this world who have tremendous potential, and he wants us to help ourselves and the world reach that potential through using the Torah as the means of doing that. And therefore, that's the names of the Jewish people. The names of the Jewish people are their potential, their talents, abilities, capabilities. So the world was created for the development of the potential talents, abilities, and capabilities of the Jewish people. That's what it means. Now, the Geula is another Medrash. The Medrash says that the redemption is hinted to in the names of the tribes, the names of the Shvatim, which are the foundation of the entire Jewish people. All of us emanate from one of those tribes. So those names represent the qualities, talents, ability, capability of that specific tribe and all Jews who emanate from them. So it says that the redemption is hinted to in the names of the tribes. And the Medrash brings down how each one hints a little bit to the redemption. Meaning, same idea. What is redemption? When the world will reach its perfection. How does the world reach its perfection? By each person perfecting himself. When people reach their perfection, then the world will reach its perfection. So where is the Geula, the redemption, hinted to? In the names of the Shvatim. When the names of the Shvatim will be brought out, realized, actualized, and perfected, then Mashiach will come. Similar to the story that I like to tell, which I'm going to tell again, in case you heard it once, you never heard it more times than I heard it from me. That's for sure. So it's a cute story. I heard this story. It's not a chazal. It's a story I heard at a graduation once when I was a kid. The valedictorian of that year's class told over this story in his valedictory address, and it caught my interest, and I've said it over many times. It's interesting, that valedictorian was in Miami, in high school in Miami, and he went on to become a heart doctor, cardiac doctor, and now I have benefited from him. He's given me a lot of advice since last year. And I just saw him recently. His name is Dr. David Galbit, so we'll quote it in his name. In any case, so he said over the following story, cute story. So there was a man reading a magazine, and his little five-year-old was incessantly bothering him, and he couldn't make headway in the magazine. So he noticed that one page in the magazine was a map of the world. So he tore the page out of the magazine, tore it into 20 little pieces for his son, and said, here's a puzzle. It's a map of the world. Go put it together, and until you put it together, don't come back and bother me. He figured, the kid is 5 years old, he has no idea what the map of the world looks like. The only way he can put it together is by matching the contours of the tears. And therefore, it's going to take him hours to put this thing together. If he knows what the picture looks like, you can pretty much put a puzzle together quickly. But if you don't know what the picture looks like, and you're just looking to match the contours of the tear, it's going to be very difficult. No, he figures he has a few hours now of peace and quiet. Keeps the kid busy. 15 minutes later, the kid comes back. I finished. The page is reconstructed, right? Just like it was when you gave it before you gave it to him. Father, it's impossible. There is no way that in 15 minutes you could have put the page together unless you knew what the picture looked like. He says, come and see. And sure enough, on the glass top of a coffee table, the map of the world is 100% in place, reconstructed, beautiful. Father says, wow, I didn't know you were a genius. You must have known what the picture was supposed to look like and put it together, not by matching the tears, but by what's it called, by knowing the picture of the world. How did you know what the map of the world looked like? He said, I didn't. So on the other side of the page was a picture of a man. I put the man together and the world just fell into place. So what's the geula? When will the world fall into place? When people put themselves together. So when people perfect themselves, the world will be perfected. So that's what it means that the geula, the redemption, is hinted to in the names of the Shvatim, right? The world exists because of the names of the Shvatim, and the redemption is hinted to in the names. Names meaning talents, abilities, capabilities, essence, potential. Okay. Another, one second, let me just finish this idea and I'll take questions in the end. There is a well-known idea, okay, that Mashiach can come in one of two scenarios. It can come what's called Be'ita, in its proper time, which means that when God created the world, so he set aside a time by which this world will reach its completion. He limited the amount of time that this world will exist as we know it. And that's called the case, the deadline. Okay? This is it. Whether we deserve it, we don't deserve it, if the world comes to that point, Mashiach's going to come one way or another. That it's going to come. It's not going to tarry beyond that point. That's called Be'ita in its proper time. Time that was designated from when God created the world. But there's another possibility. It can come, Ba'achishena, it can come earlier, sooner. God can hasten the coming of Mashiach if we deserve it. And depending how much we deserve it is how much hastened it can be. That's called Achishena. Now let's go back and see what all these Midrashim mean, and eventually come back and understand why the book of Shmos is called the book of Geula, which we already can understand, but we'll understand it better when we finish all of this. Yaakov Avinu calls in his children, and he looks at their names, meaning their talents, abilities, capabilities, their essence, and he sees that there's no chet. There's no sin, but chet really means deficiency. There's nothing missing. They have the potential for perfection. Therefore, he looks again at their names, and he sees there's two other letters that don't appear. Kates, the deadline. But because in their names is the potential for perfection, in their names doesn't exist the word deadline, because they'll never have to reach the deadline. Mashiach can come earlier. That's why the Kates isn't hinted to in the names of the Shvatim. Not negative, positive. In their names, they will never get to the Kates. Mashiach will come much sooner. The Kates is only assuming that they'll never reach and develop their names. But if they'll develop their names, then they won't have to have the Kates. So the Kates is not hinted to in the names of the Shvatim as a positive thing, not a negative thing. They go together. Because there's no Chet, Nenela, there's no Kates. Kates meaning the final time, the deadline time. That's not hinted to in the names of the Shvatim, because if they would just develop their names, they wouldn't have to wait till the deadline. They could bring it earlier. And that is exactly the other marshal. Different completely than we said. It's not that the friend of the king is embarrassed to tell the mysteries of the king in front of him, so he says something else. No. Different, completely different explanation. The friend of the king wants to share with his children some of the interesting things, some of the interesting mysteries that he heard from the king. And the king doesn't care. The king doesn't mind, because if the king minded, like we said, what kind of friend is he if he's saying things to his children that the king doesn't want him to say? So it's obvious the king doesn't mind. king would be very happy if he tells his children these things. It's not something the king is concerned about. So then why doesn't he tell his children when he sees the king standing there? For a different reason. He says to himself, you know, I could tell my children these interesting things that I learned from the king, and they'd hear it from me secondhand. But the king's standing right here. I have something better to tell my children. I'll tell them how they can be friends of the king, and he'll tell these things to him, them directly. They're not to hear it from me secondhand. They can hear it the same way I heard it, by being friends of the king. The king's right here with them. So he tells them something that will benefit them to how to get to hear these things firsthand instead of secondhand. What does he tell them? Be careful, the honor of the king. King's right here amongst you. If you'll be careful with his honor, he'll be your friend. If he's your friend, he'll tell you what he told me. You'll hear it from him. You don't have to hear it from me. I have something better to tell you. I'll tell you how to get to hear what the king told me firsthand. That's the marshal. What's the nimshal? Yaakov Avinu calls in his children, and he wants to tell them when the deadline of Mashiach is. He sees that in their potential, they have a potential for perfection. She says, you know what? Instead of me telling them when the deadline's going to be, I'll tell them something better. I'll tell them how they can bring that closer. They don't have to wait till the deadline. What does he do? Gives them blessings. Now comes the clincher. What's the blessing? It says in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv ha'adam shenivra b'tzelem Elokim. Man is precious that he was created in God's image. Chiba yaseira nodaslo shenivra b'tzelem Elokim. Extra preciousness is that he was told that he was created in God's image. Meaning what? A person can have tremendous potential. Beautiful qualities, talents, abilities, capabilities. If he doesn't know it, it's waste. The biggest bracha you can give someone is to let them know what they are, who they are, what talents they have, what abilities they have, what potential they have. Once they know it, they can do something about it. But if a person has no idea who he is, he has no self-knowledge, then all those talents and abilities are wasted because he'll never develop them. He doesn't know about them. So the biggest bracha you can give a student or a child is tell them what they have, what they are, what their talents are, and what they're not. Tosso bracha. Imagine somebody, to illustrate what a bracha it is to tell somebody what they're not. Imagine somebody who is tone deaf, has the most sour, awful singing voice that you ever heard. It sounds like when you scratch your nails on a chalkboard. That's when he sings. That's what it sounds like. Okay, I know some people like that, and they think that they can sing, unfortunately. So imagine a guy like that, and you see him go to the library one day and take out a stack of books, how to be a chazan. Wouldn't it be a bracha to go to him and say, look, unless you plan to get a job in an institute for the deaf, this is not for you. You are not cut out to be a chazan. You don't have the voice, and you're never going to change your voice. Right? You can develop a voice. You can't change it. You're not chazan material. Don't waste your time on this. Instead of letting the guy spend years learning how to be a chazan, and the first time he gets up, that's the end of the minyan. Right? They'll all run away in terror. So, isn't it a bracha to go and tell him, you're not cut out for this? You have other talents, other abilities. This is not for you. That's the bracha that Yaakov gave his children. Reuven, you could have been a melech, a kohen, and a bechor. Because of whatever you did, you lost that. So don't waste your time on that. It's not you anymore. You be Reuven, like you said. Reuven, he said it. Reuven, you're Reuven. You're not a king. You're not a firstborn. You're not a kohen. But you're Reuven. You develop Reuven. Don't develop these things. I'm giving you a bracha. I'm telling you that this is not for you. You could have had it, what? No, so Reuven had whatever. Shave it, Reuven. I can't tell you now, not because I'm trying to keep a secret. I don't know. I have to look into it. But whatever it was, each shaven had something special about them. Reuven, prophets came from Reuven. Reuven taught the world how to do tshuva. Tshuva Yisrael was Hosea, came from Reuven. So Reuven had something that he could develop and his children developed after him, but not royalty, not kahuna, and not firstborn. Not that. That's a bracha. Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi, you have a problem. Your anger is too strong. I'll help you. I'll curse your anger. What's a bracha? Intensifying something. Making it more. That's a bracha. What's a klala? The word kal. Klala means to lighten something. To de-intensify it. Right? To make it less. So you have anger, I'm going to curse your anger. I'm going to help you to control it. That's a bracha. What? To a certain degree, yes. That changing a name changes a person's essence. Right, to a certain degree, Shinui Hashem is one of the things that changes a person's essence. That's why we don't change names today. We just add a name. Because changing a name could make short circuit. You start fooling around with a person's essence in the heavens, right, and you start crossing wires there, giving new names, you may be short circuiting the person. So we add a name. We don't change names today. But used to be they should change his name completely. In any case, so that's the bracha. The bracha of self-knowledge. And therefore, Yaakov said, look, you're like a snake, you have these qualities. You're like a donkey, you have these qualities, right, in a positive way, right? You have the ability to shoulder the yoke of Torah like a donkey does, right? You have the ability to be swift and to conquer the enemies like a snake, and so on. Each one was told their unique talents, abilities. That's the bracha. Why? Because Yaakov said, instead of me telling you when the deadline is, I could tell you something better. I'll tell you how you could bring it closer. Just like the king's confidant, instead of telling you the mysteries of the king and hearing them secondhand from me, I'll tell you something better. I'll tell you how you could be the confidant of the king, and you'll hear it firsthand. Here, instead of getting a secondhand deadline, you get the firsthand bringing you closer. So what did he do? He told them how to develop their talents, abilities, and capabilities. This, therefore, the fact that Yaakov forgot the cage wasn't what was wrong with his children, just the opposite. He understood now from that there's something right with them. They don't need to wait for the deadline. So why am I wasting my time with the deadline? I'll tell them something better, how to bring it closer. That now explains another Medrash. The Medrash says that when Yaakov's children came in, he forgot the deadline. He forgot the cage. And he thought it was because they don't deserve Mashiach. There's not going to be any cage. Mashiach's not going to come, right? He thought something's wrong with his children. And he voiced, something's wrong here. I forgot the cage. So they said to him, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Shema Yisrael, our Father. Don't have any doubts that there's something wrong with us, because Hashem Elokeinu, the God of all of us, is one God. What did Yaakov answer? Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Voed. Based on what we said, we can understand what this dialogue was, what this give and take was. Like we said, Yaakov Avinu called in his children, and all of a sudden he forgets the deadline. The reason for that was because God wanted him to tell him something better, how to bring it closer, how to develop their talents, abilities, and capabilities. You don't have to wait for the deadline. But he thought that the reason he forgot is something's wrong with them. So they said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, our God, one day will be the God of the whole world. Okay? Which means, don't worry, Mashiach's going to come. One day Mashiach will come. It's not that Chas V'Shalom is something wrong with us and we're holding back Mashiach from ever coming. Shema Yisrael, listen Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, the God we believe in. Our hearts are united. Hashem, that God will one day be one. Mashiach will come. Bayom Ahu Yeh Hashem Echad. That's what Rashi says Shema Yisrael means. To which Yaakov Avinu answered, if that's the case, then the reason I forgot the deadline is not because something's wrong with you. Then the reason I forgot the deadline is because something's right with you. And Baruch, I want to increase and bless, shame the name of Kvod Malchuso, of God's honorable kingdom, La'olam Voed, forever. Meaning, what is Kvod Malchuso? What's the honor of God's kingdom? What's God's kingdom? We are. We're God's kingdom. We are his subjects who represent him, okay? And in what lies God's kingdom? Shame, the names of all the people, meaning their abilities, capabilities, and talents, make up God's kingdom. And if you develop, Baruch, you bless, you develop, you intensify the names of God's kingdom, then you can bring it at any time, La'olam Voed. It doesn't have to be of one day in the future. It could be today. It could be tomorrow. Whenever you'll reach perfection, you'll bring the world to perfection. So this dialogue is exactly what we said. Yaakov was afraid that he couldn't tell them the deadline because something was wrong. They proclaim that, no, nothing's wrong. One day God will be one. The deadline will come if necessary. And because we all believe in God equally, we're all united. Yaakov said, that's the case, then there's another reason why I forgot the deadline, because you don't need it. If that's the case, that you all believe so strongly, then you all have the potential for perfection of developing your names as being members of God's kingdom. It could be l'olam v'od, it could be any time. It doesn't have to be then, it could be now. So you bring it out sooner. So I'm going to give you the wherewithal of doing that. I'll let you know what you have, what you can do, what you are, develop it. Bring it closer. Now, that answers another measure. What? What happened? We've been working on it for quite a while, with some success and some failures. Another medrash that fits this. Medrash says, Baruch Shem Kavod, we have a problem. Because when the Torah said Shema Yisrael, it didn't say Baruch Shem Kavod. It went from Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, to V'yohavtes Hashem Elokecha. Doesn't mention Baruch Shem Kavod. But when Yaakov heard the Shvatim say Shema Yisrael, he said Baruch Shem Kavod. So now we have a quandary, a dilemma. To say Baruch Shem Kavod, Moshe didn't say it. Not to say Baruch Shem Kavod, Yaakov said it. So what do? We say it low. We don't say it out loud. Say it low. The Neder says, what this can be compared to? To a princess, a Bas Melech, Sheherichat Tzike Kedera. She smelled some kind of food, some kind of junk food that was cooking in the kitchen. That's what this seemingly how everybody learns it. I'm going to tell you a different shot. But the way everybody learns, she smelled this inappropriate food for a Bas Melech, right? They were cooking, I don't know, hot dogs or whatever in the kitchen. And that's not a food for a princess, right? She eats refined food. So she wanted the food. She liked hot dogs. To ask for it was not appropriate, right? Hey, give me a hot dog, what's the call for a princess, not nice. But she's a princess, and she's hungry, and she wants the hot dogs. So her servants brought it to her quietly. Don't they ask, don't make a big deal, want to eat the hot dogs, here, give it to quietly. So too, Baruch Shem Kavod, say it out loud, not nice. But to say it quietly, okay, we say it quietly. But what's the Baruch Shem Kavod, something hot dogs? Baruch Shem Kavod, something inappropriate? What's the connection? What's the nimshel? What's the marshal? What does it mean? Why is Baruch Shem Kavod inappropriate? So I was thinking, no, that's not what it means. It means it's like this. The Gemara says that kings eat at a set time. All kings eat midday. Because they get up late, right? They sleep till the third hour of the day. That's when they first get up. And then it takes time until whatever, they get ready. And they eat the sixth hour. What? No. David was the exception. The Gemara says normal kings get up at the third hour, and they eat at the sixth hour. What? No. I'm talking about Goyish kings, right? Regular kings, right? That's the eating hour of regular kings is the sixth hour of the day. Because they're not up till then. They eat brunch, right? They combine breakfast and lunch because they don't get up early. That's a king. Here's this princess who smells them preparing her morning meal that she usually eats with her father, right? And she wants it early. She doesn't want to wait till midday. She's a young girl. She got up early. She wants to eat and get out, right? So to ask for it, I want my breakfast early, it's not nice. Your father has a set time for eating. It's not nice to start saying you want it early. On the other hand, she's a princess. She deserves to have it early. So they bring it to her early. They bring it to her when she wants it, but she doesn't ask for it. To ask for it is not nice. Same thing. The Shema Yisrael is the set time that God made for bringing Mashiach, the deadline. Hashem Elokeinu, God is our God. Now Hashem, one day God will be one. One day in the future, that's set aside. What's Baruch Shem Kavod? No. If you develop your talents, ability, you can bring it sooner. Okay? So, the Torah records what is destined without people's intervention. Bring your proof to that. It says that Yom HaShishi hints to the fact that the Torah was given on the sixth day of Sivan. Yom HaShishi in Briyas HaOlam, the sixth day, hints to the fact that the whole world was given on a condition that the Jewish people will accept the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan. Tosfos asks a question. That's only according to the Rabbanan. According to Rabbi Yossi, the Torah wasn't given until the seventh day of Sivan. So according to Rabbi Yossi, what's this hint of Yom HaShishi? She says, no, the Torah, according to everybody, was supposed to be given on the sixth day of Sivan. Rav Yossi says that Moshe added an extra day and pushed it off to the seventh day. But originally it was supposed to be given on the sixth day. So what do we see? The Torah speaks about what would have been had there been no intervention of people. That's what should have been from the beginning of creation, the sixth day. The fact it was given on the seventh day is because people intervened and God agreed. Same thing over here. If no human intervention, the Mashiach will come on a certain set-aside, preordained date, deadline. If people intervene, come early. So the Torah records what will be if people don't intervene. This is the way God ordained it. Yaakov Avinu said, I'm telling you, you can intervene, make it come sooner. Therefore, it's like the daughter of the king who wants to eat early. It's not proper to say, hey, bring me my breakfast early. It's not nice. So, same thing, right? Mashiach, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. One day there's a deadline, Mashiach will come. We want to say, hey, no, we want Mashiach now. Bring it now. That's not nice. The demand, we want it now. There's a set time. You can't demand it. But, to say it quietly, you are the king's son, the daughters. Maybe, Taka, you deserve to eat early. So you could say it quietly. When do we say it out loud? On Yom Kippur. Why? Because Yom Kippur, all of us are in a state where we have a right to say we want it early. If we remain on that Yom Kippur state the whole year, we have a right to demand that she has to come early. So on Yom Kippur, we can say it out loud. But the rest of the year, it's not nice to demand it. On the other hand, we could say it low. Maybe we deserve it. Maybe it's okay. That's the idea. Now, one more thing, and then we'll finish. I made early check-in to make sure that I don't have to rush out of here, which I never did before, and it's a nice idea. And that was because Dr. Hoffman told me to do it. And I thank him. It was a great idea. In any case, one more thing that we can understand with this, and then we will finish. We give our children a bracha, Yisrimcha Elokim Kefrayim V'chim Menashe. God should make you like Ephraim and Menashe. By Yosem it's Ephraim V'chim Menashe, putting Ephraim before Menashe. So the obvious question is, why don't we give our children a bracha? They should be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why Ephraim, Menashe, grandchildren? Why not go back, you know, to the source? If you're asking already, you know, go for a jackpot. Basic idea is, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were avos, not just they were the fathers, they were the source of everything. All of the potential of the Jewish people was created by Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And we have to bring out that potential. Every generation has within them the qualities of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. That's why it says a person has to say, when will my deeds reach the deeds of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? On the other hand, we can't be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov because they created the potential. We just realize it. We just bring it out. We don't create new potential. Whatever potential the Jewish people had was already created. We have to develop it. But we don't create it. So you can't give your kid a bracha, be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. Because they created potential, we just realize it. So what? What are we telling them? But that potential that the Avos had went to all their generations. How do I know that? Because Reuven, Shimon, Levi had that potential? That's no proof. Because they grew up amongst the Avos, right, in their presence, and they grew up in Eretz Israel. So maybe the qualities of the Avos went to that next generation, because they grew up amongst them. But how do I know the next generation that didn't grow up amongst the Avos? How do I know that they got that? I know that from Ephraim and Menashe. Because it says it in the Torah. Yaakov tells Yosef, V'kare bohem shmi v'shem avosai Avraham v'Yitzchak. In these children is called my name and the name of my forefathers, Avraham and Yitzchak. What is the name? In these children is my qualities, abilities, capabilities, and Avraham and Yitzchak. Meaning, the potential of the Avos is in Ephraim and Menashe. Now, Ephraim didn't grow up amongst the Avos. They grew up in Mitzrayim. And they didn't grow up in Eretz Israel. So there's no reason to assume that if they have it, that no other generation has it. Every generation has it. So the proof is from Ephraim and Menashe that every generation has the qualities of the Avos. So that's what bracha we give our children. You should know, Yisimcha Elokim, God should make it clear to you that you are like Ephraim and Menashe, like they have the qualities of the Avos, so do you. However, don't get carried away with your potential. Because you know who comes first? Ephraim before Menashe. Menashe had more potential than Ephraim. He was the Bechor. But Yaakov saw prophetically that Ephraim would develop more of his lesser potential than Menashe developed more of his more potential. So in the end, who comes first? Not the one who has the greater potential, but the one who realizes more of his potential. That's what we tell our children. You have great potential, but don't get carried away because the main thing is not the potential. The main thing is what you do with it. The main thing is, potential is like a zero. If you have a lot of potential, you have a lot of zeros. It's still a zero. If you put something in front of it, a lot of zeros becomes a big number. So if you develop it, it's very nice. You don't develop it, it remains zero. So that's the bracha. In fact, the Yonasan ben Uziel, the Targum, says that this is the bracha we should give our children on the day of a bris. We don't have that in our ceremony of the bris, this bracha. We do it on Friday night, every Friday night. But I was thinking we paraphrase this bracha, according to the way I explained it, at a bris. Kashem shenichnas lebris, with the name. It says that the potential of the avos comes to a boy at the eighth day when he gets his bris. That's when his nishmat Yisrael, his special Jewish neshama, with the qualities of the avos, comes to him. And that's why we name him on that day, because that's when he gets his name, his qualities. Kishem, with those qualities that you came into the bris, that's what you should develop for Torah, Chuppah, Maishim, Tovim, which is exactly Yisibuk Elokim, Ephraim, Lechem, Menashe. You have the potential of the avos, develop it. Put Ephraim in front of Menashe. The last thing is, if that's the case, then you should ask me a question. I just said you can't bless your children by saying that they should be like the avos, because they created potential, and we don't create potential, we just realize the potential they created, and set as a reservoir, a gene pool for all generations. So how do we bless our daughters? Yisimech Elohim Kesara Rivka Rachav Aleiha. We bless them to be like the mothers. If you can't bless the boys to be like the avos, why can you bless the girls to be like the imahos? So one answer, which the women will like, is that it's true men can't create new potential, but women can. Because women, part of their role in this world is to bring new life from their very bodies into the world. So a woman can create new potential. She can have a bracha to be like the imahos too. She can have a bracha to be creators of potential. That's one answer. Then there's another answer, possibly, that even the imahos never created any potential. They just helped bring out their husband's potential. So therefore there's no problem of telling a girl she can be like the imahos, because they don't bring out potential anyway. So whichever one you like, you can choose. And that is why the book of Shmos is the book of Geula. Because where is the redemption? In the names of the Jewish people. In that potential of abilities, capabilities, and talents, if we would just perfect it and bring it out and realize it completely, then that would bring the world to its perfection, and then the Geula would come, the Meir of Yomim. Okay.